Welcome back to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. Well, we've turned the calendar to a new year, and SDPB's Kevin Wooster joins us for a look at life in South Dakota. On the other hand, you can find that blog online at sdpb.org/Wooster, and he's joining us now from the SDPB Black Hills Studios in downtown Rapid City. Hey, Kevin, welcome back. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year, Lori. Say, I want you to know that there were three Wooster sibling brothers. Henry and Marie had in Lyman County. Two of us, of the three brothers, are in the South Dakota Hall of Fame. One isn't. Who would you guess is it?
I don't know. Let me ponder that for yet.
I'm trying to live with it. I'm trying to carry this burden, but
That sounds like a challenge for me to nominate you this year.
No. So. And I've already told my kids and anybody else that might make a sympathy move on my behalf that I will not accept. If nominated, I'll refuse. I will not show up. I'm not Hall of Fame material. I'm sorry. I'm just not.
But you are pretty excellent.
I'm sub Hall of Fame excellent.
All right, Kevin Wooster. So your last blog post was actually a 2019 post about a Christmas tree and a phone call from a certain congressman, and it tied into when I read that we're going to have Dusty Johnson. We recorded a conversation with Congressman Johnson last week, and we're going to air that in its entirety tomorrow. And he gave us an hour, and we posted it on SDPB news site, and some people were upset that I mentioned. That he had, been generous with his time because they said essentially that's his job. And I said, not so fast, because it's not a given that a congressman will walk into your studio, make his own schedule and sit and give you an hour and say, ask me anything you want. Tell me a little bit about Dusty Johnson and how his your relationship with him and his accessibility, which is noteworthy.
Yeah, and I think it maybe is part of the job, but different people, office holders, commit more energy and openness to that part of it, I think. And he's pretty darn good at that part of it and has been. And I think that's his experience working for governors Rounds and Dugard and understanding the process and then being an elected official himself, prior to this with the Public Utilities Commission. I think he understands openness and the value of it and the importance of it, but also some people are just naturally more chatty and likely to engage on issues, and I think he is. Even in the age of Donald Trump, when it's difficult for a Republican office holder at that level to be too candid on certain areas, you have to be introspective a lot of the time on some things that you're asked.
Right.
But, the column was an example of that. I don't think that I've worked with a congressional member or a governor that's been as open and accessible as Dusty, at least for me, since I worked with Tom Daschle, who was amazing in that regard. I mean, when he was one of the three or four most powerful people in Washington, you could still call him on a cell phone and get him. I remember a call I had one night where I called him at home. He was reading a book, very important book that he read all the time. He read and ran and did things, and you could just call him up, and the minority or the majority leader of the U.S. Senate, wherever he was at that time, would answer the phone and say, hey. And I haven't experienced that since, and I don't know that if Dusty Johnson ever reached the level that Daschle is, he would be able to maintain his openness the way he has it now. But right now it's pretty nice, and that's kind of that's where we took off on this Christmas tree blog column.
Right, where you're you have your arm full of Christmas tree and you answer the phone.
Yeah. Hey, Wooster, what are you doing?
Yeah.
Merry Christmas.
And it's there's a realness to the conversation as well, which, I'm sorry, is not always what you get. With it might be their job, but not all of them are as good at that part of the job as others.
Exactly. And I could reach John Thune pretty easily with a call to his staff. Tim Johnson, I love Tim Johnson, and he did some wonderful things. Tim Johnson was not somebody that wanted to be accessible like that. He had a lot of work to do, he felt like, and he gave an annual or a weekly conference call that he was open on and handled. And obviously that got more complicated with the former senator, after he had the brain hemorrhage and the impairments. But before that, he kind of liked to do his job and work and not have to take press calls all day long. And so everybody looks at that and decides, how open do I want to be? How accessible do I want to be? And how much do I want to respond to pesky reporters bothering me all the time?
And then there's Governor Bill Janklow, who would call you maybe more than you wanted.
Yeah, I mean, he could be very accessible, but it was usually a one-way street. Mm-hmm. He would access you.
Yeah.
And but if you weren't on the list of people that he was refusing to talk to or at all, you know, and that was the Argus at some times, it was Kello at other times, it was the Journal at other times, because he was mad about certain coverage that we did, or an editorial. Maybe the reporter would get banned because of an editorial for a while. Although, again, to clarify that, he would never try to kick you out of a news conference or to tell his staffers or his cabinet members they couldn't talk to you. He just wouldn't talk to you, except in a professional sense.
How would he have handled Twitter? That's a broader question about really how Twitter and some of these social media sites have changed the conversation, where lawmakers are, that's where they make their statements, that's where they say they don't feel like they have to take a call because they quickly tweeted something out.
Well, he would have been more discerning, believe it or not, a lot more discerning than the most famous Twitter tweeter that we have today. And believe it or not, he would have listened to his staff more than President Trump apparently listened to his staff on what's appropriate and what. And he would have just had a better sense for what a governor or a congressman or especially a president should be saying in a public forum.
All right. So we're moving into the next legislative session, and so far some of the news after Governor Noem's budget address has been really about Governor Noem's staff. So let's transition from this idea of accessibility, which, you know, as a personal note, we haven't had as much success with Governor Noem in that regard as certainly we had with Governor Dugard. Do you think that's a staff issue? Do you think that's the personality of the person in office? Are they still sorting things out staff-wise? Because there's, you know, lots of raises happening in our office and reassigning of duties. What's going on, do you think?
They have some issues there, I think, in communication, in presenting a face, a unified front, a clearly defined agenda and philosophy for the office. The access issue, I've received a couple of calls from the governor, and where she'd just call me up and talk about something I wrote. One of them was on the blog, and mm-hmm. And that's good. That's great. I love that, and I'd love to see more of that. And I think she has shown up places, sometimes even semi-hostile places, to talk to people about issues. I was at a couple of them out here in Rapid City, and that's good. But I think people are having a little trouble figuring out who they go to get information in the administration, and how reporters can reach the people they need to reach and get a comment from the governor or for the governor in a timely manner. At least what I'm hearing, that's very uneven, and it's kind of hard to figure out who the go-to person or people are there. And, you know, that's a difficult process to put together a team. And I don't think it has come together as well as she would probably like it to have come together at this point.
Hmm. What are some of the stories from 2019 that you think will still resonate in 2020 that will really, you know, we covered it in 2019, but really in this new year, we're going to see the impact of some of those things. What are you still thinking about here in January?
Well, hemp's going to be entertaining. You know, I reached out to Jason Roundsburg the other day with a little joke on hemp. And I stole some of my wife's hemp-based hand lotion, and teased him a little bit about that.
Did he respond?
I haven't heard a response from him or heard of a response from him. I had people suggest that I was going to have to go to exile in Wyoming. And I love Beulah, so I'm not worried about that. But I think the hemp issue is probably over at this point. She's probably got the vote she needs to not have to worry about that very much for now. I hope she is open to a reasonable consideration of that issue, because I think it is something that we shouldn't just turn our backs on, that it's going to come to our state regardless of whether we want it to or not. So I hope she's open to a reasonable discussion that eventually leads to something maybe beyond this impasse. The pipeline issue is and the whole riot boosting thing that came up last year. Again, when I see some of those things happen, I think you're just not getting very good advice on that. And I don't know. She seemed to buy herself trouble she didn't need there. There were some issues there that needed to be addressed in terms of who's going to pay for law enforcement at the local level and who's going to help pay for that and how are we going to manage resources there. But it was just such a high profile and inciting way to go about it that she did. And to her credit, I have to say that when she got booted off the Pine Ridge Reservation, you know, where she probably wasn't going very often anyway, banned from the reservation because of that, it didn't change the way she approached their needs when it came to flooding and storms. And I gave her a lot of credit for that. She just went about the business of being the governor for all people and tried to help out the way she could. And so now I guess she's not banned from the reservation for the time being. But then she came back with the kind of a modified version of riot boosting. So I'm still trying to figure that out.
We seem to have a sense of what she, you know, her convictions are strong. And it seems to be more of a policy and organizational staggering that we haven't quite seen settle in yet, even though it's been a year.
Yeah, and I think people, you know, there's the age of conspiracy theories. Everybody's coming up where she's against hemp, for example, because her husband's in insurance and can't cover the crop. And I really think when she does these things, takes these firm stands, I think it's because that's what she believes.
Yeah.
And I don't think there's all these ulterior motives. She may be wrong on them or not be approaching them right, but I think she's genuine on those things.
Do you think when she appoints in the realm of conspiracy theories or what insider baseball, do you think when she appoints people to replace some of these lawmakers who are left, she's asking that question, how are you going to vote on hemp?
Well, I certainly think that was, you know, Helene Duhamel, when she replaced Alan Solano, there was a District 32 vote lost, you know, for the hemp folks, the pro-hemp folks.
Yeah.
And I can't imagine they don't have those discussions. I would say I like the fact that she replaced a male in our district, District 32, with a female senator. I think that's great. Helene Duhamel, I think she was a good choice. I don't know about the replacement in 35, but it's another woman, and I think that's great. I think putting, you know, capable women in more positions in the legislature is good for South Dakota. So.
That's Jessica Casaberry replacing Lindy DeSanto, and Jessica Casaberry is a preschool operator.
Yeah.
So now you've got that preschool conversation coming back. We're out of time, Kevin Wooster. We could just go on for.
That's what happens to us.
So it was an excellent conversation, maybe not worthy of a Hall of Fame, but still excellent.
Have any nominated names come in for me? Anybody nominated me or moved yet? Because I won't accept it. I want you to know that.
Don't get banished to Wyoming just yet.
Don't try and put me in the Hall of Fame. I won't stand for it.
SDPB Kevin Wooster, you can find his blog at sdpb.org/Wooster. We'll see you next time, Kevin. Thanks.
See you. Take care.